my Pacer Insider, your Pacer Insider from IndyStar.com is our great friend Dustin Dupirak, at Dustin Dupirak on the Twitterverse as well. He checks in, and it's been a very busy couple days basketball-wise around the Gainbridge Fieldhouse Complex. Have you been swept away in the Caitlin Clark tidal wave, buddy? Good to hear from you.
A little bit, yeah. Not a whole lot, because we had our beat writer Corey Peterson on that, and Greg Doyle was also doing some work on that. I mean, my job was just to talk to the Pacers about Caitlin Clark to get their sort of takes, because they were not allowed to talk about it, because they're all under that ownership group. So, like, a lot of the rules that apply in terms of when you can talk about a prospective draft pick and when you can't apply across the board, you know, apply on
it even,
you know, the other side of the street, if you will.
It does on the radio. And there were times in the last couple months, you know, listening to Pacer games, where Mark Boyle, the Hall of Fame voice of the Pacers radio, would be talking about the WNBA and star players from states with a lot of corn, because he couldn't even talk about it. So
yeah.
I think the big release was the 6,000 people in the building, everybody celebrating Caitlin Clark. And now it's funny, you've got Iowa State, Tyrese Haliburton, Iowa Caitlin Clark. They're having a little fun. Caitlin Clark's boyfriend is one of the McCaffrey boys who works for the Pacers. Iowa's taking over. Hang on with both hands. Here it comes. Look out. But starting with Tyrese Haliburton, the big news here in the days off leading into the playoffs, well, a huge honor has been bestowed upon Tyrese Haliburton. Tell the listeners what he learned earlier this week from Grant Hill.
Yeah, he's going to be an Olympian.
That's awesome.
It's a big deal. It's a huge deal. I mean, would you consider, when you really look at that team, and obviously they're looking at this as sort of LeBron James is going to be part of it. Stephen Curry is going to be a part of it. You know, this is one of those teams they're looking at as kind of a last hurrah for some of those guys. And so everybody's all in on this team. I mean, obviously sometimes you have issues trying to get guys to play in international competition, you know, after they've just played a full NBA season and gone after titles and everything like that, and then you're asking them to come back and play, you know, shortly thereafter. I mean, their first showcase game is going to be, I think, July 10th, and that's, you know, what, 3 weeks after what would be Game 7 of the NBA Finals happens. But these guys are all bought in. I think just they see an opportunity. Some of these guys see it as their last chance to play in Olympics. Stephen Curry's never been on an Olympic team, and so, you know, this is a big deal to be a part of this. And so if everybody's signing up, that's a really hard team to make. And it tells you just how happy, you know, USA Basketball was with what Tyrese Haliburton gave them in the FIBA World Cup. And I think they really liked how he played as a backup point guard, and like the fact that when he's around those type of players, he's willing to distribute and not look for his own. I mean, if he can score, he can score. But, I mean, he's willing to, you know, pass first and pass sort of always. And, you know, that's what you're going to do if you're going to come off the bench as a point guard with that group. So I think they're looking forward to having him. And obviously it seemed like just even from the beginning, they were pretty set on this is our guy. And Steve Kerr, anytime he's been asked to talk about him and what that experience was like, having him for a World Cup, he's been thrilled. So it's just been, seems like he's been very clear about getting that point across that this is a guy that really fits that role. So, I mean, this is like, you know, this is a dream team caliber team. It's not quite 1992, and obviously doesn't have the historical significance for that being the first one. It's also not the same as the Redeem team after they had lost in 04, but this group really, really wants it bad, and for a lot of these guys, it's going to be their Olympic swan song. So again, to be a part of it, to be one of those guys in that team is really meaningful and means a lot, I think.
Yeah, this isn't like the Pro Bowl where 19 guys drop out and all of a sudden Gardner Minshew is the quarterback. I don't want get anybody confused there. You did a great job of illustrating the want. Kerr identifying talent, so to be included with that group is fantastic. Now, is that going to make you beat the Bucks in a seven game series? Well, I don't know, but I know kids and players, Dustin, always confidence is a very, very important part of the game. We saw Tyrese Haliburton struggle with his shot over the it was a good 4 or 5 weeks. It wasn't 4 or 5 games. It was 4 or 5 weeks. So you put his shot back in order, as we've seen here recently. You saw a bunch of points scored, and here come the healthy Pacers heading to Milwaukee on Sunday evening, 7 o'clock tip time, against the Bucks. Who's hurt for the blue and the gold? And then we'll get to the Bucks, who are a little banged up.
Yeah, I mean, the Pacers are pretty clean. I mean, obviously on Going into Sunday, the win over the Hawks that got them into the, the number six spot, they had three guys listed as questionable, and Rick Carlisle said they were all available. Obi Toppin, Jalen Smith, and Isaiah Jackson. And then Jalen took yesterday off, but he was in practice today. I think he just wanted to heal up a little bit, just given the opportunity when you have this much time in between. Obi Toppin says he's fine. We saw Isaiah Jackson doing some workouts today. He seems like he's okay. So basically, obviously, the only guy who's certainly going to be on the injury report, obviously, is Benedict Mathurin, who's out for the year with the shoulder. But as far as anybody that had a chance at any point in this discussion to play, seems like everybody's fine as far as the bases are concerned. So it seems like the lingering stuff from those three guys should be more or less healed by the time you get to game one. I mean, obviously, everyone's got some bumps and bruises. I mean, Halliburton's been dealing with a sore back. Jalen Smith had that. Miles Turner just deals with the overall ailments of being a large human. And so, there's all that kind of stuff, but everybody's pretty much ready to go. And on the flip side, Giannis Antetokounmpo does not look good for him starting the series. I mean, the Bucks are hopeful that he'll be able to come back at some point. Obviously, the first round gets dragged out because there's all these games and they're trying to get them all in TV windows. So you have breaks in between and you end up with a good two, weeks of playing seven games. So they're, have every reason to believe that at some point he's going to be able to come back. But it doesn't sound like it's likely for game one. And I would think not game two. It's a pretty tight turnaround. You got a Sunday, Tuesday deal, for game one and game two. So, I mean, that's only one day past. If he's not ready for game one, I have a hard time imagining he'll be ready for game two. And so you're taking the two-time MVP, out of the equation. That's certainly a big deal. The Bucks can handle that on some level because Bobby Portis has played very, very well. So it's not like you're throwing a, replacement player in there at the four. You're throwing a guy in there that's got a good case for sixth man of the year, but Bobby Portis is not Giannis. So that's a scenario where, certainly works out for the Pacers, and you have to think, man, they really got to get one of those in Milwaukee.
Does that put extra pressure on the Pacers? Number one, they haven't been in an extended playoff series in some time. I mean, if you want to go back to the wide world of sports bubble, I guess we could do that when T.J. Warren was the hero. Or we can go back further than that. What was that, 1819 I was reading you wrote? It's been a while, but I hope this doesn't put any undue pressure on a team that really hasn't had a chance together to experience this. I want to ask you about that pressure, but they also have had some pressure already in the in-season tournament. I could probably connect the dots there. I know it's different, but having to go into Milwaukee, knowing Giannis isn't there, playoff basketball is a little different too. They think they saw that. There's not going to be 145 points every night. What do you think their mindset, what have you heard from them, is there going to be their mindset heading to the land of cheese and beer?
Yeah, no, I think so. There's a lot mixed in there in terms of there's good, but there's bad, there's otherwise, as far as just the whole sort of mental mindset of what it's like for them to go into their, for a lot of these guys, the first playoff series ever. For a lot of these guys, others, the first playoff series in a while. For other guys, their first playoff series with this organization. They have not done this together, period. And so, Miles Turner's been in a situation like this in the Pacers uniform, and really that's it. I mean, TJ McConnell was part of the bubble playoff, but that's the only one he's been a part of in a Pacers uniform. So for a lot of these guys, it's either, new totally, or it's just new for them together. But I think, so you start there that they don't have a sense of what they are like as a playoff team. But they have all of these kind of simulations that have gone on throughout this year of in short spurts, or like you said, in the in-season tournament. They've had pressure scenarios. Obviously, again, you start there, with the in-season tournament, but again, they've just played the best teams in the league. The last couple weeks, I think that there was a little bit of that when, Miami was a must-win game, Atlanta was a must-win game, Oklahoma City was a big one. Even Toronto was one of those where you had to kind of prove, like, hey, you finally got to beat somebody that's not any good, because you guys have a problem with that. You need to win the ones you're supposed to win. And so I think they did get pushed in a lot of different ways this year of, you know, here's a taste of it. You know, here's a taste of that. You know, here's a couple games in a row where you're playing in one place. This is what it feels like, you know, back in Philly in November, or, you know, a home and home against Milwaukee in January and a couple others like that, Miami in November and December. It's like, this is kind of what that feel is like. Kind of take this in and keep it in the back of your mind and bring it back when you're in playoffs. So they've had a few of those situations that I think they'll be able to call upon, but again, it's not the same, and they are going to have to get used to new things. So there is some level of experience. Again, the fact that they beat the Bucks 4 out of 5 times helps. They know also that that doesn't directly mean that they're going to walk in and blow out Milwaukee, but they at least go in knowing, like, hey, this is a team you've got at least a puncher's chance. Again, they're not bigger than life. You can beat them. So there's a lot of kind of mixed things in there. It's going to be an adjustment, but they have some things to call upon as they make that adjustment.
Dustin DePerak, Indy Star. Dustin DePerak on the Twitter, IndyStar.com. Please support your local journalists so we can get the inside information about Pacers Bucks. The series starts again Sunday in Milwaukee on our airwaves. Pre-game at 6:30. We'll tip it just after 7 p.m. And Milwaukee with Giannis. Dame Lillard's got a groin adductor problem as well. I know that's not as severe as the other one. Milwaukee, they tried just to roll on with Adrian Griffin. Well, he was overthrown, back in late December, early January. Doc Rivers hasn't exactly turned the ship around, but he has all the playoff experience. Well, so does Rick Carlisle and the 9th most wins in NBA history. That's a pretty good coaching matchup, isn't it?
Yeah, for real. It's two of the top three guys as far as active coaching wins. So that's really something for sure, is to start off with that kind of matchup. Obviously, it's a different deal for Doc having taken it over midseason, sort of still being in the midst of trying to get used to these guys and trying to get a sense of what they can be. So it's a different deal. Obviously, Carlisle's had a few years to build this and really start from scratch and start over. But I mean, it's guys that have been there before, guys know what playoff basketball is like, have a sense of the tactician work. And they've got, they've had some mixed bags. Obviously, Rick's got a title, in Dallas, and Doc's had a hard time getting one, but they've both been very successful. And so they have won. They know what it's like they know what this is like to get done. I think it's going to be very interesting, kind of matching with those two. But Doc has managed, I think I had an interesting conversation with Jim Ozarski, who's the beat writer of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel of our greater Gannett family. He said there are ways in which they're a better team, even though they're only, I think, 25, they've won 25 of their last 50. So they're 500 since they started 24-8. But there are ways which they're better built for postseason because of what Doc's been able to do in terms of making them a postseason team. So it's very interesting matchup on a bunch of different levels. Interesting to see how Milwaukee has grown this year, adding Lillard to the mix and just creating kind of a new trying to find some level of kind of consistent chemistry there.
And without Giannis there to bail you out late in the clock, you maybe look to Dame Lillard. That's a different animal. No offense to Mr. Lillard, but if you gave me the choice of who I'd want not to play, that's an easy one. I don't think I'm breaking any news there. Tyrese Halliburton's from the state of Wisconsin. TJ McConnell had an interesting thought about the Pacers the other night on when did you guys get things figured out? It's like, well, when we decided we wanted to grow up. Is Halliburton in his first time, first circus go around? He can't be worried about impressing or doing it for the fans. He's got to run the team, right? But McConnell's been great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, the two of them have been just really good at playing off of each other, and they've been able to play together also. I think that's been really big. I think obviously Halliburton kind of found himself in a situation where he couldn't bring the ball up all the time because, he was facing, blitzes right at the top, right as he was coming across half court. To be able to really function, he had to be able to move off the ball. And obviously they've been starting Andrew Nembhard, but they've had this deal where McConnell has played, they've played together and been pretty successful in those cases. The two of them both matter a lot. I mean, McConnell's been one of the best subs in the NBA. He doesn't quite have a sixth man of the year chance, but I mean, he's got to be, he'd finish in your top 10, I think. I mean, if there was an all sixth man team, he'd be on it. He's been fantastic, and I think he's also adjusted the fact with Benedict Mathurin out, basically that second unit, he's really the only guy that can break you down off the bounce. And I think that's made him look to be a lot more aggressive on offense than really he's ever been. And he's tried to do that in general with this group, just kind of pushing the pace, but he's kind of looked for his own shot more. I mean, he's shooting way more than he ever has, even though he's actually playing fewer minutes, which is pretty wild. But he's been really fantastic. I mean, just for a guy coming off the bench, especially when the season started, you know, Rick Carlisle, you know, even told us just, oh man, I had this really hard conversation where I had to tell him that he's not in the rotation to start the year.
Right.
Found out pretty quick that you couldn't keep him out of the rotation. They had to adjust to make it work, you know, because at the time, you know, they still had Bruce Brown, and they were looking to get Nembhard, you know, starting point guard minutes, or second unit point guard minutes. And it was like, okay, how do you make this work? And he's like, well, you kind of have to, you know, kind of, you know, have TJ as the third guy, and sometimes he plays and sometimes he doesn't. But then it was like, hey, this is one of the best competitors, one of the most important players. You got to find a way. You know, so after the trade to send Brown to Toronto for Siakam, you know, then you have this opening to move Nembhard into the second guard role, and then you can make this whole thing work. But it's been something. It's been pretty wild to watch how they put pieces together. TJ's just been just so important at every turn for these guys.
And the flexibility with Nembhard not needing to score the basketball helps because you can play different ways. I think that's fantastic. I think Siakam has finally bedded in where sometimes you just have to go to him 10 possessions in a row. What game was that? The Cleveland game where you just said, here, there you go.
Yeah.
Please carry us. And a little unlucky that night with the charge and then some other plays in that game. But when we talk about Styles making fights, the Pacers just scored the fourth most points in NBA history. Did I read that correctly? Fourth most?
Yeah.
Well, the playoffs, if you watched last night, and I know you did, you got LeBron James versus Zion Williamson. It's 83-76 in the fourth quarter. How is this from the Pacers going to translate into the kind of slow down, grind it out, which can turn what the NBA playoffs can turn into?
Yeah, no, I think I talked to him about this week about, okay, how do you expect this to balance? And basically the only thing that there is to do and the only answer to that question is you run as much as you can. You know, you try to do it as much as you can. You push the pace as much as you can because that's who you are, and you kind of can't go away from it. And you sort of presume, okay, well, you're not going to score 123. You know, they're averaging 123 a night. You presume you're not going to do that, but maybe you can get 115. You know, maybe you're in somewhere in that range. And so you end up, you don't have to be the same high-scoring team that you were in the regular season, but if you could be the highest-scoring team in the playoffs, you can get someplace. I mean, Denver, I think, I was just checking these stats, actually. You know, I think Denver averaged 113 a night in the playoffs last year. And I think they were like maybe fourth or fifth or sixth out of all the playoff teams. But I mean, I think they were second among teams that advanced. And so it's like you can be a team that scores a lot and advance. You can push the pace. You can score a bunch of points. There are going to be opportunities. You just got to have to go after every opportunity. And these guys, you know, tend to really push the issue. And, you know, if you're going to slow them down, you're going to have to work hard. You know, they're not going to let you. They're not going to just walk it up and, you know, sort of embrace the idea of the slowdown game. You're going to have to, you know, keep them from breaking you down the floor every single time. They're going to push after made baskets. You know, I mean, basically, like, you make a shot, you know, they're looking at the ref and say, hey, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball.
Yeah.
And so while you're celebrating and, you know, like, making the signs to your bench or whatever it is, you know, they're breaking right back at you and trying to get a layup. And sometimes they do. And so that's the thing, is they're just going to be opportunistic about it. When they can run, they're going to run. And so they're not going to embrace the slowdown game. If it happens, it happens. And they've got to be good in the half court. But they're going to try to make every opportunity to get an easy bucket when they can do it. And they're fast enough to do that. And they've got the depth, which also helps, is having, you know, I think they're still going to have to play nine deep, you know, and you bring out a guy off the bench like Obi and even TJ, that can really push the pace, and Obi could just outrun everybody, you know, and you're going to try to get buckets that way off the bench. And so I think that's the thing, if they're going to be able to run at you for 48 minutes. So you're probably, you know, if you're dedicated to it, you're going to stop it more than you do in the regular season, but that doesn't mean you're going to stop it enough to really, really slow them down.
No point in changing your stripes if it's gotten you this far and it's gotten you into the top six where you're not playing in these Mickey Mouse play-in games and adding more bumps and bruises. The Pacers, you've got to stay true to with what you're at. They have to win one game in Milwaukee, don't they?
Yeah, I think so. At the end of the day, if you've got two opportunities to beat Giannis, you know, you got to take them. I mean, there's just no way you get that kind of gift And, yeah. You know, you have to take advantage of it.
Right? Giannis will feel even better. Rare. Giannis will feel even better going to Indianapolis up 2-0. He'll feel better.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Then if you bring it back to Indy with momentum, you know, and he's fresh, basically after having worked, you know, taking some time off for the calf, and he comes out. If it's not, you know, if it's really ready to go, and he comes back game three, and he's already got a 2-0 lead, we're gonna have a really hard time stopping him. You know, and so, and obviously they've proven they can beat him even when he goes off. I mean, like,
right,
he had
50-something.
54 in Milwaukee, and they still beat him. Obviously, the one time that he won, that the Bucks won in the regular season series, was when he had 64. they're going to try to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Well, that's odd.
But, yeah, he needed all of those, too.
He did.
So, yeah, it's just, I think, you know, I mean, he's going to be a tough cover. He's going to be a tough guy to deal with. You know, they have to take advantage of where Milwaukee's soft spots are. They have not been a great defensive team this year, but you are still dealing with Brooke Lopez around the rim, and he's a problem. So, you know, they have to take advantage of what's there. But, yeah, ultimately, I think when you're given the opportunity and you have, you know, a Milwaukee without Giannis, you got to take at least one. You don't have to take them both, but you got to get at least one.
Can we have you back next Wednesday to preview the first home playoff game in some time for the Blue and the Gold?
Sounds like a plan, man.
Awesome. Well, safe travels up to Beardtown, the Fiserv Forum, Sunday night, 7 o'clock, game one, and then Tuesday night, game number two. Dustin, thank you so much, buddy. I appreciate your time, as always.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.